This ain't the same for racists. Niggas is raging, there's mass immigration. Having no kids, so the state is changing to make way for these new names and faces. While liberal butt cheeks are chapping, I'm rapping. These swivels get wrapped up in image and acting. iPhones get snatched up by blacks, it happens. Live streams cut off when it happens, that's it. I've seen Dindus, I've watched Negroes, watched Ferguson and Baltimore and watched them blow. Watched the crime rates and watched them grow. Watched the lawsuits when they punched Popo. Hispanics and Negroes, I hate them both. Forming long lines at the hospital. No money, so they get the Obama phone. I just sit back and watch the show.
Everywhere that I go, ain't the same as before. The boys I used to know, just don't know me no more. But everywhere that I go, I got crackers I know. Who got Nazis they know, so I suggest you lay low.
Gave the kids the derm talk, you blame me. Niggas hit many white men who can't see. But niggas can't hit racists who break free. I'm out of sight now, I'm out of they dang reach. How would you feel if your hood was enriched? You'd pack up your shit for a good district. Get your daughters away from their sons. I ain't a cuck, how much bigger snoot than you got? I ain't no bitch neither. You feel the skin's getting crispy? About 616 degrees I'm preheating. Nigga, we can go round for round. Standard fuck parties all over town. If you really wanna take it there, we can. Just remember that you fucking with a family man. We got higher IQs than you, remember that. When you wanna come and steal these shoes.
Everywhere that I go, ain't the same as before. The boys I used to know, just don't know me no more. But everywhere that I go, I got crackers I know. Who got Nazis they know, so I suggest you lay low.
Things just ain't the same for racists. Jews is anxious to make us all race mix. Don't wanna shame us, shut us down and defame us. Busting blacks through the same places that raised us. Then they wonder why we act so racist. Stop and frisk and put niggas in cages. Cause every time you let whitey say hate speech, it's dangerous to people who look like Screech. But now we got a new era of racists. ANCAP libertarians converted to statists. Looking at us now, calling us fascists. Liberals attack us, signal for status. I'm the leader of this NRX shit. And this the motherfucking thanks I get? It's funny when a country dies. Just having fun, just watching the deep.
Everywhere that I go, ain't the same as before. The boys I used to know, just don't know me no more. But everywhere that I go, I got crackers I know. Who got Nazis they know, so I suggest you lay low.
Welcome to the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you June 14th, 2015, this Sunday evening. I encourage you to check out all of the great shows here on the network. We've got a full week of shows, and you could tune in almost every night of the week. And I encourage you all to please think about doing one of the wild cards coming up. We have Nick from the Jackal's Den coming on tomorrow. Then, of course, Return of Tier with Drew on Tuesday. We've got Dion on Wednesdays, another wild card on Thursdays, Dana Antiochus on Fridays, and the Roundtable on Saturdays. Tonight, folks, I do not just have one guest, but I have many. I have some of the crew from therightstuff.biz. You might know them for their well-known show and well-received show, The Daily Shoah, which is actually a weekly podcast. And also, they now have ovenworthy.com coming in hot. Hot off the presses there. That one just got put out recently. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Shoah. And I'm actually adding another one of the crew right now. I have with me right now Mike Enoch. Mike, can you say hello so the audience
can? Hey, how are you? How is everyone? Yeah.
Good, thanks. We've got Meow Blitz. Wow.
Hello.
So I think Meow Blitz handles the Twitter account mainly and posts on the site as well, calls in.
He does all kinds of shitlordy outreach for us.
Yeah, it's great. And then who's the third member we have over here?
This would be Seventh Son.
Seventh Son. All right. Yeah. There's a new movie coming, a movie out about you. I don't know if you saw that one. I did.
I heard it wasn't too good.
Yeah, he plays Jeff Bridges in that movie.
Fantastic. I am all right, guys. When did the rightstuff.biz come into existence, and when did you start the Daily Showa?
Okay, well, I guess I'm probably best equipped to answer that. The Right Stuff kind of was a website that started from a group of friends on Facebook that were kind of like anarcho-capitalist libertarian types, but also kind of racist, and shifting away from that scene and kind of looking for something. People had discovered like Mold Bug and Neo-Reaction and all of that stuff, formed this group. There's a lot of differing opinions. Some were like really libertarian, some real hard Christian, some were going neo-reactionary. But I was like, whatever, we have this group, we're all friends. Why not just do a blog? People were posting like multiple paragraph long posts with like thoughtful commentary. So I was like, screw it. I can do this. I know how to do these things. I'll just throw up a blog and we'll see what happens. And it actually started getting some readers. And we did that for about 2 years. People's views evolved. In the course of that 2 years, I became, I think, significantly more educated on certain topics. I moved in a very sort of, for lack of a better term, a white nationalist direction. And I started to think that really the biggest problem that we have is multiculturalism, immigration, that differences between, political differences are essentially differences between white people. So, you know, and these are things that are going to be hashed out. You're going to have liberals and conservatives, but we should just have a country for white people. And that's
Wearing a swastika yet? Have you evolved to that stage?
I've come very close, but something in my youthful training still prevents it. But, I mean, it doesn't matter because to the left I'm wearing one, so I might as well if I want to.
Mm-hmm. You're crypto right now. We're all cryptos.
Everybody's crypto, yeah. Crypto-Nazis. So, you know, there was all kinds of different weird opinions and different stuff, you know, and I kind of, my policy was, I'm not pushing a direct line with this site. I am, it's for my friends. At first it was like a lark. It was like, let's just have fun and then see what happens. And ultimately we got to a point where we're getting about 2,000 or 3,000, page views per day for like maybe 1,000 readers. And that was when I was like, hey, for the hell of it, let's do a podcast. Well, you know, because we would have these Skype calls some weekends and we'd be on for like sometimes like 10, 12 hours talking. I mean, maybe not everybody lasted that long, but I can talk forever. So we would do, and I would be like, you know, we have really good discussions. And when people actually shut up and let someone else talk and we don't, you know, we're not like the periods where everyone's talking all over each other, we have really good conversations and really insightful things are said and nobody else hears it. So let's just record ourselves doing one of these one night.
All right.
So we just started doing it.
What about the name? How did this name come about?
That actually came up because I presented the idea in a thread. Seventh Son jumped in and was like, I can do the recording and stuff. And we're like, what should we call it? And there were some stupid names. And then somebody just literally typed, LOL, how about the Daily Showa? And that was Duke Godwin, who's one of our writers.
It could never be anything else. I mean, that was like...
Yeah, once he said it, I was like, if we choose any other name, now we're... Yeah.
Do you feel like your podcast has brought you to a much wider audience?
And oh, yeah, absolutely. I have the metrics. Audience is probably about quadrupled.
And how do you feel you all have been enjoying it? Do you find that this kind of interaction with the audience is much more rewarding and effective than just merely having words on a website?
Yeah, I think so. I like to talk more than I like to write. And actually, even though sometimes our show is up to 3 hours and it takes us at least 4 hours every night we do it to put it all out, that's like less time than I would spend on an average article when I was still writing articles. But I also think it's more personal. I think it's more rewarding for the listeners. I mean, our audience spiked. And a lot of our sort of more autistic, if you will, fans say things like, oh, it's too long. You don't focus enough on any one topic. You know, I think we actually do a pretty good job of focusing on topics sometimes. Not all the time, sometimes.
If you decide that it's too long and you never listen to it, how do you even know that?
Right.
It's so long, you can't even focus. It's like, what are you talking about? We talked about a subject in like detail for an hour.
Yeah.
And we did stupid comedy.
I have found that our audience has gotten bigger and people feel like they know us personally. And that's a good feeling. And that's great. And I feel like that is making a difference because the type of shit we talk about, excuse me, the type of things that we talk about, I don't know if I'm allowed, I should say on this broadcast or not.
Yeah, you know, the company that runs this podcast, you know, that we pay for the service, they probably don't want you swearing. I'm not too much of a stickler about it, but we might have something of a family audience listening
to
this.
As family friendly as I can.
All right.
So the type of
that
material.
That being said, don't hold back.
Yeah. Okay. The type of material that we discuss is something that a lot of people that want to talk about. There's probably people out there that would love to talk about this with somebody, and there's nobody that they can talk to about in their life. In their immediate vicinity. They can't. And so when we talk about it, people feel like they're having a conversation about it, and then, you know, they can comment on it. We, you know, we read their feedback. We engage with them. I've become personal friends with many of them. Actually, I should give a quick shout out to my friend Lawrence Murray, who I actually met in person this week, and my friend Edmund Birkenstock, who I met in person the same night. So we've been doing things like this. These are both fans that actually came to us through our comment section and then email. Now I've gone out and met them. So we're trying to do this kind of thing, kind of build like a little sort of in-group. And I think we've done it.
Here's a recommendation for you guys. In 2013, the whole crew of Renegade basically met up in some way or another. Some of us traveled up and down the East Coast, flew out to a conference in the West Coast out in California. And I filmed the whole thing, you know, and I put it together into a documentary. It's about 2.5 hours long. It's called Renegades in America. The audience loved it. We did shows from the road, you know, broadcasted while we were all driving in the car and called in to, you know, shows that were still going on in the network, whoever was, you know, still at their house to be able to do it. And it was a very rewarding experience. So if you guys could do a road show, that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's something to think about. I mean,
We're supposedly having Ghoul's going to be out this way next month, and there's supposed to be an IRL In My House death panel show that day, at least the three of us, and we'll see where else. Obviously, I'm going to invite every TR Swagget in the tri-state area if they want to come out, but that's going to be fun.
Yeah, hopefully all boys in the area.
You know, a lot of people warn against meeting in person because you never know who's going to be a Fed or this or that. You need it. You need it to make real connections with people.
Yeah, yeah.
IRL, in real life, for anybody that doesn't know the tech speak out there listening.
The other thing that I wanted to say about that is since we've been doing this show up, my profile in the sort of white nationalist community has risen a little bit. So other people have noticed me and reached out to me. And so then other people that are in the movement, in the community, whatever you want to call it.
That's happening to me a little bit too. And I'm like, don't you guys know that I'm just the guy that records the autistes?
David Duke is inviting you over for dinner.
I've become very good friends with Greg Johnson, for example. And I actually had lunch with him today, as well as a few other people from his sphere. So, like, you know, it's really been an interesting experience. And I went to the American Renaissance Conference a few months ago, and people came up to me because they recognized my voice. That's weird. Mm. I mean, it's like, yeah. I don't want to actually
it's
get
It's a distinctive
very,
voice. You weren't wearing a Daily Show, a t-shirt to an AMREN conference?
No, I don't need to. Well, first of all, you're not allowed to. Second of all, yeah, I think my... Yeah. I'm loud enough and my voice is recognizable enough that people came to me that were fans. And so I met people that were fans and that was great too. I mean, that was mainly why I was going down there. Mm-hmm. So, good. Sometimes it's a little, what's that?
Do Jews look white to you?
Sometimes. Some of them do.
Some of them do. All right. Maybe we'll get back to the Ameren conference in a little bit and see if you guys have attended any other conferences or could recommend any. Actually, you know, let's just talk about that right now. Who else went?
Just you? I went down there. My friend Bulbasaur went down there. Sean Last, who's another writer for our site who focuses a lot on very well-documented articles on HBD and race realism, he was down there. A couple other friends who aren't, I don't think, want to... What's that?
I said I was supposed to, but I totally fagged out on that. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, you got obligations. That's really the only actual full conference I've gone to. I have been to several meetups. And there's several people I live in New York City. That's not a secret. I mean, I made that known on our podcast many times. So there's more. I mean, New York City, granted, everybody knows that it's like the most liberal, multicultural city in the world. But you would actually be surprised how many people there are to meet up with here.
Yeah, sheer volume, too. Just
yeah, you would figure that with possible. That many people, you would have to have a few.
And also, a lot of these people are ones who are experiencing the pleasures of diversity up front.
Yeah, well, this is actually a thing. And we actually probably talk about New York City an inordinate amount relative to how many of our listeners live there. But there's a couple other people that write for our site that live here. And Seventh Son is, you know, just a short train ride away. And it is really – the thing about it is why it's useful to talk about. And it's actually useful for me to sort of walk around and have some of these experiences. I'm getting sick of them. Is that it's what's coming. It's what our country is going to be in 50 years. All of it's going to be like this. Every city will be like this. And well, I actually don't even know that every city will, because there's a particular demographic makeup to New York City, but it's still only about a third white. And so it feels, you know, you get on the subway and you're like, holy crap. And it wasn't even like this 15 years ago. I mean, I've lived here for a while. It wasn't even like this 15 years ago. It's getting worse, and it's going to continue to get worse.
Yeah. Well, once upon a time, basically every major city in the Western world was majority white. It wasn't too long ago. This is just a few generations ago. Yeah. Then basically ethnic cleansing of white people occurred. Nobody really wants to call it that, though. But they were basically chased out of the cities, white flight. In certain cases, it was legitimate riots. Race riots that really aren't covered in our history books that occurred in this country that sent whites packing. Now, I want to see what it was that drove you guys to start questioning the racial structure of our country and not seeing blacks necessarily in the brilliant light that the media likes to portray them in, the magic Negro, as it were. I myself didn't grow up around a lot of blacks, so I probably bought into the whole Urkel type of Will Smith, cool, hip black man who's witty and intelligent and all the rest and can dance well. That was probably more the reality than somebody who has grown up, say, in New York City and actually sees it really up close. What about you guys? Seventh Son, Meow Blitz, let's hear from you guys.
Well, every black that I knew, every teen that I knew growing up was scary. Didn't want to be around them. Even though where I grew up, there was no kind of like real like ghetto lifestyle going on. They liked to pretend that there was, and that was enough for most of the white boys to be like, ooh, stay away from them. Mm. So it was pretty much early on had that feeling from the beginning that this is just not someone I should have to be around. Why am I forced to be in the same building with these people? This guy looks like he's 23. Why is he a junior in high school?
He probably was 23.
I know, and it was just like, I don't know, that was crazy. But then, you know, as I got older and I went to college, and then you meet some college dindus, and they're your more like annoying, educated. What was that stupid movie with? Ah, never mind. You're more educated college.
Higher Learning.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that's the one. Where they're just
dangerous.
Like,
the Dangerous Minds graduated to Higher Learning.
Yeah.
You know, like, what I saw was that it was the cream of the crop at my college of the different minorities. You're not seeing the average black or the average Asian. Well, the average Asian is probably not too dumb, but or the average Hispanic, mestizo or whatever. You know, you're not getting the kind of on the street reality by going to college and interacting in this multicultural utopia.
But if you're not explicitly, like at the time when I went to college, I wasn't explicitly looking to stay like white focused. So it has that Naxalt effect on you, where you're meeting the higher echelons of these people. They're like, I guess it's not. What was I worried about? And then they live. And for me, like libertarianism kind of said, oh, actually, no. Worse than that, before that, was the good coy blue-pilled conservatism of Rush Limbaugh and that type of thing sets in, where your goal is to prove that the liberal is more racist than you are. They're the real racists. Yeah. They could be just like us if given the proper tools.
Liberals don't know that conservatives are less racist than them.
They are actively they will blame everything on parenting, blame everything on nurture, leave nature out of it completely to a fault. You know, like
there's actually they like systemically find a way to avoid. The basic, like, if and the we're maybe getting a little bit off topic, but this is something we can, you know, like the way that the statistical population is measured in the United States, it's possible to be like, oh, well, look, negative issues are correlated to child abuse, they are correlated to single parent families, they are correlated to high crime. Low wage areas, etc. You know, so like, but all those things are also just black people.
Oh yeah, the biggest you know, correlation. So it's like, you're not the biggest to... correlation of crime and just all sorts of misery is how many blacks you have living around.
Misery,
you.
Right? And so it's like, sure, it's all those things, but all those things are just how black people are, or at least how black people have been since civil rights.
Well, yeah, their empowerment has led to their family structure being completely destroyed. They've embraced this Jewish Hollywood image of the gangster. They wonder why white people are so scared of them or racial profiling them. Look at the way that they're portraying themselves. They're embracing this thug lifestyle. You know, all of them think that they're, you know, back in the 90s, they thought they were all Tupac. You know, then it was that they're Biggie if they're a fat guy, or Big Pun, or all this ridiculous Lil Wayne rappers. It's just
how dare you
so
call us
retarded.
Thugs. That's a code word.
Thugs, yeah. It's the new N-word. That's N-word. Right.
Where's the cat man? Hold on. Where's cat man?
Meowblitz.
Where are you at? Do you have a problem with calicos, black cats, white cats? What's your story? Did he leave? He's not even there, is he?
He's tweeting.
He seems to be tweeting. I don't know. But I can say that as far as my background, I definitely grew up around a lot of black people. So interesting because I didn't grow up in New York City. I grew up in a suburb right outside of New York and Newark, New Jersey. And so I was always enriched my whole life with this vibrant culture right next to me, even though it was a fairly well-to-do sort of oven middle class area. You know, there was a lot of blacks from Newark and from East Orange and from other towns in that area that were coming into my high school. And, you know,
was this a busing project, or was your district like gerrymandered so that would happen?
There was some busing. There was some assistance by white liberal families to fake up and give black kids from Newark a mailing address, using like letting them use their mailing address to like register for the school in our town. And that actually became so scandalous that people were, when they registered for the school, had to show like deed, and it became like an issue. So, but like for however it happened, there, my school was, when I was there, about 40% black. And I know that now it's about 55% black.
You know what eventually happens and has happened in a number of different school districts, I think particularly in Connecticut, I saw the story about this, is that the diversity just explodes. It reaches a certain point, and then it basically overwhelms the whites, where the white parents say, no, I'm not sending my children there anymore. We're moving. We're getting out of here. And then the diversity levels go from, you know, 30% up to 55%. And in no time, it's 95% non-white. And nobody wants to be in those schools anymore.
No. I mean, the interesting dynamic that
happens. Not even the blacks.
Yeah, no one wants to be in them. And like the interesting thing is that the town I grew up in is very liberal, very progressive, very democratic, also very white and very wealthy. And white and Jewish and very wealthy. And now I know that most of the blacks aren't living in that town because they can't afford it. They're coming in from surrounding towns. The demographics of who lives in the town, it's even richer now. The property values are even more valuable because of the housing stock there than when I was a kid. So even wealthier people live there. It's even more of a middle class. And they're probably – but they're not sending their kids to the public school anymore. You know, like they're all sending their kids now to private schools. And that's and the public school has now been completely taken over by Vibrance. So it's an interesting – that's a very localized phenomenon to this one particular area in New Jersey. And somehow all of these white people probably still think of themselves as very progressive liberals. But when you actually and they'll blame the issues in the schools on something other than the fact that it's full of black kids. And I just the original question that spurred this was, you know, what was our sort of exposure to vibrancy in our youth? And, you know, when did you kind of become, I guess, red-pilled, for lack of a better term, on the black issue? And for me, I kind of always was, but only in the last few years have I been around people where I had the sort of freedom to just openly talk about it.
Just to board out the N-word.
Yeah, and I never really did that very much before, but I kind of – and I probably at one point thought, oh, you know, if they put more money in the schools or something. You know, when I wasn't very politicized and so I didn't think about it. I mean, when I was younger, around the black kids, you just cope. You don't and some people cope by kind of adopting some black cultural stuff or, you know, trying to be cool when around them or, you know, but you always know. And this is the thing. I think back on when I was a kid, always knowing like they're unpredictable. You don't know exactly what they're going to do. They'll like you and be like your pal and then they'll take shit or the, you know what I mean? You know, it's like
you never know what's going to trigger the rage. You have to walk on eggshells and just try to be
You never know when they're just going to like, if you let them in your house, they're going to take shit.
Oh, you never let them.
You know what I mean? They're just going to remove things from your home and leave. You know, you don't know if that's going to happen. So, like, I mean, I had experiences a black kid would come over and some of my video game cartridges would be gone or some of my comic books would be gone.
You know, it's the actions of the blacks that have shaped my opinion of them. It's not that inherently deep down I you know, was like, ooh, I hate seeing black skin. I just hate these. It's like, it's really that you experience what they're all about, and you don't experience this until they reach a certain threshold, in my opinion. From what I can see is if they're at maybe 10% of a town or a school, they pretty much will adopt the general type of accepted behavior as best as they can. But once they've reached a certain percentage, they feel completely empowered and they just let loose. And this is what we're seeing in Detroit and Baltimore and in pretty much all of these different cities, St. Louis, Cincinnati, McKinney, Texas, your typical pool party. I mean, that's what a typical pool party is becoming. Did you guys see this?
The standard
pool party. The twerking festival that went on at some water park, I forget where this was, they basically rented a water park for raising some funds for some charity, or at least that's what they said it was about. So they had this big party there, and the video leaked out of it, and it was just the most disgusting, raunchy thing you can imagine. And they're giving themselves such a bad image. This is what the liberals in college did. They made me absolutely hate them. I even joined the mailing list for the college Republicans. I never went to any of the events because they all seem kind of like douchebags.
No.
But
no, you're wrong because as we all know, such views are based on pure ignorance and lack of exposure to diversity. So what you're basically saying is you've never been around a black person in your entire life, and you've certainly never been to college.
I've never been Jewed.
Exactly,
by Jews.
Exactly. Like my whole life, I've never encountered any of those people. I lived out in the backwoods in a cabin, stockpiling ammunition for the Rahoa, and that's it. I've never. if I was only exposed to diversity, I would change my entire life around.
You know, there's actually some data that suggests that with all other groups other than blacks, exposure does actually increase tolerance. So, like, maybe this is a talking point that white nationalists might not like, but if white people are around Asians and Asians are around white people, they tend to like each other more.
Oh, yeah.
That was said a few months, I think it was a month or two ago on the show. I said that my racism had been, like, waning a little bit. I'd be getting a little more, what's the word?
Slipping.
Moderate. I was slipping. But not with the blacks, but with, like, the other ones. Because I was just, like, I was only, like, doing the comparison between, all right, what are the mestizos like versus what the black? Like, the mestizos within three generations, yeah, they're still socialists, but at least they're not, like, carjacking you and stealing your shit. Like, whereas blacks have been here for, what do they like to say, 400 years of oppression? It's like 400 years of not getting your shit together and doing anything. Yeah. You know, you give these other, you know, liberals love to bring up, oh, in the 20th century, Goy, we brought in all the Irish and they assimilated our, you know, and we like to attribute that a little bit to, you know, skin color and the culture being similar enough, being European. But it's just like when you compare it to blacks,
the Irish are always whining about how they were slaves and demanding reparations and saying that's why they're being held back in our society today is because of systemic Irish oppression. You know, think about it though. How many Irish presidents have we had? One, and he was shot in the head. Only one Irish Catholic president. It proves it. This is systemic ginger racism.
He really should have called in air support though at the Bay.
That's not.
I mean, Kennedy has so many things that I disagree with him about, but it seems that he really was pissing off the Israelis in particular, and that's probably why they whacked him. And Netanyahu actually mentioned something about the grassy knoll in reference to Obama, and I think this was some ways alluding to the fact that Israel was very much opposed to Kennedy being a president because he opposed the nukes for Israel. He was not as good of a goy as Lyndon B. Johnson, who just completely covered up the sinking of the USS Liberty.
Is this what we need? More Irish Catholics in power?
No, I don't think so.
Save white America?
Well, certainly not today, but maybe a week.
I think the Irish, and I am Irish, but the Irish were pretty much used by the Jews in many regards, and they work in similar practices like law. And they were kind of radicalized against the WASP elite, in my opinion. But that being said, the Catholics, the Irish Catholics, have been against Jewish agendas for many decades. And you can see this for a while at least, in terms of the pornography, in terms of all sorts of degeneracy, you know, the really kind of leftist Miley Cyrus twerking type of stuff. They were at one point standing in the way of the Jewish agenda and all.
Apparently not anymore, unfortunately.
No.
Now they're, But, you know, I think also that in regards to different European ethnicities and kinds of white people that, you know, there's maybe some squabbles to be had, but we've been fighting amongst ourselves for too long. And now we're actually under a demographic threat. So I don't really, I don't. And in America, we're all mutts, you know.
This is a perfect time for a 30 years war. Let's just go at it. All of our little ideological differences, let's bring them out and just kill each other over them.
Yeah.
You know, pagans versus the Catholics, Catholics versus the WASPs. We'll get some Nazis in there, their radical views, and we'll just mix it all up.
Yeah, I think it's a really good time for white people to be eating each other up with their different belief systems. I mean,
yeah. Well, so. I was obviously being sarcastic.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's
you
very hard.
Hats, you come together.
It's very hard.
You come together in solidarity, Goy.
It's hard to really try to achieve white nationalism, though, because of all these different factions and sects and different worldviews. And I think that the best way to do it is just kind of a loose conglomeration where you have strategic alliances at some points, but you're not trying to have like a really official big tent party or anything, because people will work best with each other. And this goes down to the local level. You know, you probably want to have mainly Christians living around Christians. And if the Norse pagans want to go off and do their things in the woods, let them do it. We don't have to all be living under a kind of a totalitarian white ideology.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. And I also think to what you were saying before about meeting people in real life and stuff, people need to do that more often. And because most of this stuff goes on the internet, and it's very easy to get involved in fights on the internet because there's less social stakes to being a complete asshole. So, like, people should meet each other in real life, IRL. So I would even urge, if there's fans of our site that live near each other, to find each other and just have a beer together some night, you know? And I really think that because I've met in real life with people that I don't agree with on a lot of things, but I don't care about things that are, you know, other than actually, you know, physical removal of, you know, like our focus now is on physical removal of the undesirables. Like, we need to get a place where we can have our own country and do our little intricate white people things, and we can argue about the nuances of social democracy versus laissez-faire capitalism or whatever at another time.
And under the current system, real quick, under the current system, this, of course, is not possible. They have HUD spending billions of dollars, the Housing and Urban Development spending billions of dollars to diversify every neighborhood. Obama just recently came out with a plan to diversify the neighborhoods that aren't up to snuff, don't have enough Section 8 or whatever. And he's going to make it a priority to just bring the pleasure.
What kills me about that is white people's answer to invasions like that is to flee. We have to somehow stop white flight, and we have to come up with another way to react to these things, because we're going to run out of places to flee to eventually. And it's getting...
I mean, there's a lot of country to flee to.
Yeah, but still, I mean... States,
but I see what you mean.
Keep coming. They're going to keep coming. I mean, you have to put a stop to it. I don't know how.
But on some level, white nationalism isn't even on the radar of the left. So the immediate agenda of that here's the thing. You know, there's some people on the alt-right that sort of like to look at, you know, very sort of authoritarian dictatorial systems and be like, hey, look, aren't those great? You know, when you're imagining some other time and place and people. But they're in America, in the United States, the government was set up with certain checks on the power of the executive. And I actually, as kind of a waspy kind of America fag, I kind of believe in that. And I think that that's good. I think the executive should have checks on his power. And we're seeing why right now. Because Obama is saying HUD, Housing and Urban Development Office, cabinet level office, can just do this. They can just do this.
Or amnesty.
They can override local zoning boards. Yeah, amnesty is another one. They can override local zoning boards. They can force Section 8 housing into any community that they want to. And the Republicans, to their credit, came up with a bill to fight it, and it passed both the House and the Senate, but he's just going to veto it. So they're trying to post hoc check his power, and then that goes to him for a veto. They don't have a veto-proof majority, so... we're done. That's done now. That HUD program is done. They're going to do it. They're going to and they're going to do it because, like I said, white nationalism isn't on their radar. What's on their radar are Republicans.
I disagree that white nationalism isn't on their radar.
It's on the radar. You're right.
They just won't. They're just not. They're not acknowledging it. In some regards, they are.
It's on the radar as the the most dangerous terrorist threat in America, of course, is the
it's on the radar of like the SPLC and stuff. And I think that they would like to believe that every Republican is a closet white nationalist when that's not true. But this HUD Act is going to be used to try to make heavily Republican districts vote Democrat by putting black people in them. I mean, that's I think the immediate goal of it, but you know, ultimately, it's just further you know, dilution of any majority white area.
I think they're pushing too hard, too fast. I think that their action is going to cause such a reaction that they're not going to be able to contain it. I think that this is already happening, and that's why they're trying to shut it down. They want to shut down the internet because, you know, even though you don't think white nationalism on the radar, they're really pissed off that white nationalist talking points dominate every single comment section and are the top-rated comments. So they just shut down the comments. So
let me tell you why you're wrong, though. I mean, I think they've done enough damage the past, you know, 7 years or so of Obama, and in the next year, they're going to do enough with this HUD program. It's going to be enough that it's going to be. You're not going to be able to outvote it in a general election.
I'm not talking about voting necessarily. I'm talking about real legitimate power. They're pushing too hard. What is going to be the response to this? I mean, really, when it comes down to it, votes don't really matter. What matters is...
not very much.
I mean, because as we've acknowledged, even if you vote in senators and House representatives... even if they get other people to go along with it, it doesn't even matter. As long as the executive and the judicial are in the hands of our enemies, what's the point? I mean, what really needs to happen is some kind of populist uprising, and I think that this can in some ways happen from the local level. In particular, if we got some sheriffs, even if we just had people in local offices.
Well, there are probably some sheriffs, I think. I think Joe Arpaio is on our team. You know, I don't know, you know, the idea of uprising, I mean, not that I'm saying it would be bad or anything, but I'm not sure that that's how it would all is all necessarily going to be playing out. I think that really what we need to be worried about now is when things like this HUD program go into effect, it might even be a good thing. Because then isolated whites who aren't exposed to vibrancy are going to get exposed. And we know it's a statistical truth that when you expose white people to blacks, they turn racist. And what that's going to do is what we have to do is open up a space where race can be talked about. And that's been done on the internet. And it's been done with various blogs, with various websites. And it's made it like okay and safe thing to talk about. It's not still not safe to talk about IRL. You got to worry about your job, and you got to worry about your family. So you can't really, you know, just be racist all over the office or something like that. But increasingly, you know, and we get emails on our site. I get emails once or twice a week from a guy who's like, you know, I stumbled upon it, and you're right. You know, I was just some basic bitch conservative in my town. And I knew something was wrong, and now I'm listening to you guys, and you're great. So, you know, I think we just need to make it safer to talk about these things. And that's the first step. I don't know what steps are after that.
Pushing the Overton window is how it's described, is basically shifting the dialogue to make certain things that were once extreme seem acceptable. But to be honest, most of the things that we're talking about not too long ago, 40, 50 years in some instances, were the mainstream. This is how most people felt. And then basically the whole culture of critique, Jew media, really messed with people's minds. And it's ramped up so quickly in the past years with the gay marriage, with trannies, with the twerking, interracial, all-in-your-face type of Miley Cyrus, masturbating on stage. It is gone so quickly.
It's gone parabolic.
With the diversity, and that's why I'm saying that this pushback is going to happen in a big way. And what you were talking about, more people, you know, getting aware of this, what I see happening is that it's people with a lot of power and influence, potentially, with a lot of money, who are now seeing that their children's future has been sold down the river. Their children's children don't even have a chance. These houses that they've bought on the beachfront property, what is it going to mean when there are just blacks roaming around? They don't feel safe. And I really do think that although we don't have any political leaders who are in line with us, absolutely none. People argue about Ann Coulter. Mo Brooks mentioned the war on whites, but he's a staunch Zionist. Okay, the point is that the people, and I'm talking about millions of people, are going to have some kind of pushback. And this pushback, even if it's just verbal or demonstrations, is going to have a massive effect. I organized the 2014 White Man March. I don't know if you guys were aware of this or saw any of the the reaction at the time, but people were going nuts. You know, the whole Gawker, Jezebel, of course, they were reporting on it. But all these international news organizations were talking about the White Man March. And it was only a few hundred people around the world doing anything. They like to downplay it and say it was only in one location and that it only had eight people show up. Or they said no people showed up. But we had worldwide press just for some people, white people, daring to even go out and stand up for themselves.
It's just interesting how they say, oh, it was nobody showing up, but it's still super, super important.
Right.
You know, nobody showed up, but it's also super evil.
Just the idea of it is just enough to kvetch over for hours and hours. And even just recently, the White Lives Matter flyers, very basic, that went out in Connecticut, making international news. Oh, my God. How dare white people even say that their lives matter? Of course they don't. They oppress blacks and others for centuries. So it doesn't matter. It's just divine retribution when they get what's coming to them through the knockout game or mob violence or carjacking and raping and torturing or whatever.
Hey, Kyle, I want to add something right here.
Meow Blitz.
Yeah. So You were talking about before about how you can look at any mainstream media site, and this is the exact thing I've observed, is, you know, you go on Salon or Gawker or whatever, Huffington Post, and just scroll down to the comment sections, and you're bound to see something very reactionary. And, you know, that was exactly what you're talking about.
A bunch of cats yelling Heil Hitler?
No.
Cat avatars.
You will see, like, you will see a lot of that, like, white genocide meme kind of thing. You will see a lot of people, you know, obviously you're going to get a lot of that conservatard shit in there, but, you know, Obama's a Muslim or whatever. But I've seen it again and again and again. If you go to any mainstream liberal or leftist website, if you just go to the comment section, you'll just observe how much the comments are totally against whatever's being, portrayed in the article or something. And the only time you'll see mass agreement, you can scroll down and you'll see just like comments deleted and edited out and so on. So you're definitely seeing a big reaction. I mean, and it's funny to me because people are like, oh, well, you idiots, you're just hanging around the internet. You're not doing it. That's the funny thing I always hear, you know, among the far right kind of fringe, just like, well, let's do something. Well, usually the person calling to do something is usually some like FBI agent, who's like convincing you to like, blow up the White House or something,
Yeah, or
to
do catch you like off guard.
But and it's like, no, the internet is one of the most powerful tools in the world we have today, especially with trolling and so on. I mean, we've seen it again and again. You see it with like Gamergate and all this other stuff. And it's like, or like you see how was ISIS formed, on the internet, on Twitter, or the Iranian government was almost entirely overthrown on the internet and so on. So people who are like,
with some help
that
from,
don't under right, but people who don't understand the power of social media and the internet and so on, they're just, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's more. I think like what Kyle was saying, there's more of us than we think. And
yes,
what we need to, and the problem is, one thing that happens, we people let their little particulars get in the way. But I think people need to start. We need to find a way to. I mean, having it be on the internet is good. And we just need to make these things safer to talk about and, more mainstream to talk about and appeal to people that are, not like esoteric, not into like esoteric Evola Nazism, like guys that are just like ordinary bros that like to drink beers and go out and hang out. Like that's who I think our show is trying to appeal to. And that's what I want to appeal to, because that's the culture. That's the culture that needs to be preserved, like our our sort of white bro culture is one of the things that we want to preserve. That's going to go away if we're overrun.
No more keg parties?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, they wouldn't be quite the same type, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Keg parties with shootings. You know? Or, you know, yeah, but you know that
you'd have to chain the keg down. Yeah,
it's only one aspect, but it's something I grew up with. It's something I think all of us grew up with, and it's not something I'd want to see go away. You know, and you know, so all these multiple different subcultures and there's multiple different ideologies, but we feel have to, you know, put bullshit aside, and we have to focus on this demographic issue.
There, you know, to give a little credence to what you just said there. Not saying there wasn't any originally, but is that they're actively going after the frats.
Yeah.
Mainly white fraternities. They cannot stand any kind of white camaraderie. It's dangerous to them.
Of course.
They can't stand any white space, period. But yes, but when it's young males having camaraderie with each other, you're right. They really don't like that.
I mean, like the fact that they're buying the Bacardi or whatever, and they're making their shekels. Yeah, that's good. Let's push some degeneracy down their throats while they're drunk, and make some shekels off of it.
Well, who was it? That was that that black woman. She was like a professor or something, and she had gotten into a big controversy. She said something along the lines of like yeah, black males are the biggest problem on colleges. I was like, what are you talking about?
Said white males. I think.
Yeah, white males. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You said black males. Yeah. And of course.
You said black males. Yeah, I was like, what's controversial about that?
No. I meant white. Yeah.
It's amazing how white males are basically the worst thing that a social justice warrior could imagine. We are the enemy of the feminists. Yet white males throughout history have treated their women far, far better than the Muslims, than the Mexicans, or even the Asians, or whoever. The Middle
That's
East.
That's why our women get to be feminists. We are too nice.
Right.
Yeah, too nice.
Chivalry. I mean, this was not a concept that was really practiced in other cultures. And yet they can't seem to see that disconnect. They're all for open borders, embracing all these people, but they don't see the fruits of the Muslim or even Jewish way of life. They're willing to accept these Jewish feminists. And yes, the early feminist movement, and probably the current one, even though I'm not too up on it, was primarily Jewish.
They were
promoting this to us, to the Goyim, but never to their own. Their own women were not embracing feminism in this way.
Well, it's interesting. The early feminist movement was actually very sort of Protestant, Puritan, and was involved in, prohibition and stuff like that. But the second wave,
the second wave feminist movement
was literally, I have not found, and I have put out a challenge, and I think I've said it on our show before. I challenge someone, if you come up with a non-Jewish woman that was a second wave feminist, I would just, and I'm not saying there wasn't one, it's possible there was, but I honestly don't know of any.
They had a lot of sex appeal though. Andrea Dworkin. I don't know if you guys are aware of Andrea Dworkin.
She
was twerking with Andrea Dworkin. Oof.
Actually, one of them was pretty hot though. Was it Gloria Steinem who was in Playboy? I think she was a playmate. One of them was a playmate. But most of them were not. But, you know, Betty Friedan was one of the ones. She wrote, I think, The Feminine Mystique. And she was talking about how she sort of put the idea out there that, like, having a husband that takes care of you, provides for the family, having kids, it's, like, not enough. And you long for, I don't know, to you get sexually fulfilled by having sex with a black guy or something. I don't know what it would be. You know, but she didn't live that lifestyle. She was a housewife.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
All right, I've got somebody here.
Of course. All right.
I've got somebody here who goes by Ghoul. He is one of your
Yeah, he's one of our death panel guys.
Hi, right. Ghoul.
How's it going?
Ghoul, welcome.
Thank you.
Anything to add before we go on to some new topics here?
Cool. When did you start hitting
gears? Yeah, when did you become such a raging anti-Semite?
Yeah,
I grew up that way because my dad was very racist.
There you go.
He made honest observations, and I confirmed them with my eyeballs. And that's how I That's how I became a shit lawyer.
Who are you going to believe, Malcolm X or your own lying eyes?
All right, how about
it's like this? when I was I can't even remember how old I was, probably like four or something, and asked my dad how come I can't understand what black people say, and he told me it's because like they're so lazy they don't even want to put in the effort to form words correctly.
Did you ask why they were so tall? And did he say because they're Negroes?
I've said this one before, but okay. when I was a little kid observing the Olympics, I asked my dad why I never see any black people swimming, and he said because you would have a hard time swimming too if you had a sponge on your head.
It's pretty deep. Well, how about this? How about we get a few definitions out of the way? Word "shitlord" was brought up. What exactly is a shitlord?
An unapologetic normal fag who's white.
Yeah. I think it's somebody who openly espouses things that SJWs hate.
Is this different than an edgelord?
I think an edgelord is somebody who's deliberately pushing things to the edge, like who goes into every discussion forum with like a Nazi flag avatar and is like, we'll settle for nothing less than full on pro Hitler national socialism, you know, and at all times from all people.
No compromises. No surrender.
I think an edgelord is more of a troll.
Yeah.
More on the edge because you have to get maximum reaction out of somebody, I think. I could be wrong.
I don't even think shitlords are people who say things that piss off necessarily. I mean, they can be, but I don't think it's necessarily people who say things that piss off SJWs as much as it's basically just being a straight white person who does
white person
things.
And edgelord is the people talking.
Random guys you see at the bar, like having drinks with friends, and calling each other bro. That's a shitlord.
You're right. They're shitlords.
Yeah.
All right. So about this edginess, the way I see it is that in some ways being edgy is good. I think being edgy can't be effective. But we've got our enemies who the whole liberal left thinks that they are the edgiest, the absolute edgiest. I mean, they are doing some really out there sick stuff. But just because it's really perverted and weird doesn't mean that it's cool. I think they just are trying to keep upping the ante. And
it's also not even edgy. It's just gross. One of the reasons why if it was edgy, it would, you know, people would feel threatened by it. They would challenge them. But people were just like, more fucking artists shoving things out their vaginas.
I saw recently, I don't remember who published it, but these people, these were grown adults, 20-something people, that were talking about eating ass, like this was the going to be your penis or something, and they were actually getting into like the mechanics of how it worked. They had a pelvic model that showed you the muscles that contract. It was just like, are you fucking serious? Like, what's this for? Like, why would you? Never mind. I'm not going to go any further than that.
But the thing is,
it's not edgy. It's just disgusting. It's just
that's
terrible.
What they
just,
like, this they think thing is edgy.
But the thing is that. It's not edgy because it's endorsed wholeheartedly by the whole mainstream.
Right. Yes.
You're seeing it on television all over. How is that edgy?
Yes. Right. The system is behind this. And this is the thing that we've talked about this before. Like, and one of the things we've even had, like a game, we'll play like a little game on our show. We'll be like, let's name him.
Did I lose him? Okay. I think we lost Mike Enoch. Okay. I think it's just Mike.
I think he was going to talk about the game we play where we try to talk about who's doing the fake non-PC jokes. I think that's what he was going to talk about.
What's funny is it's hard to tell the Salon parody account from the real Salon on Twitter.
There's a Salon
parody account where they just are putting out, you know, hysterical one-liners, you know, as fake Salon headlines. But I'll tell you what. Recently, this past week, when Salon put out that basically white privilege is to blame for problems in the NBA, I mean, I thought that was the fake salon, and I was like, whoa, 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 this is the real one? They're blaming blaming a sport that's dominated 85% by blacks, and they're blaming it white privilege for some of the conflicts. And, of course, it's you look at the number of Jews that own these teams, and now we got this big Jewish coach as well.
They own everything.
I don't pay attention to any of it, but it's definitely one of these things that the young white men are encouraged to just fawn over. Basketball is supposed to be huge in America. I guess it is. But, you know, LeBron, all the heroes, all the – yeah, go ahead.
I don't understand how any white person can watch that. I mean, I don't know. There's nothing entertaining to me about – I have a hard time with sports as it is, but basketball is always the worst. Even before I went full shitlord, basketball is like, how can you stand here and watch this? It's literally the most niggerish sport there is, because there's every play there's a score. And that's kind of how their time preference is. There's two points.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's like the whole Don Sterling thing where everybody's like, oh, this guy, Donald Sterling, oh, he's so white, and he said these racist things. And then you dig into it, and you're like, who the fuck is Donald Sterling? And he obviously is a fuck kite.
Sterling.
You just dig into the whole thing. He even said that he established all these apartments that were exclusively for Korean people, because he didn't want any blacks to move into them. He even like put flags outside them and so on.
Well, yeah, crazy. He's Donald Tokowitz, and of course, when Jews do anything wrong, oh, look at those old white men who are just so racist, and they own
exactly
all of
like
the
Sony incident when North Korea hacked into Sony, and they showed them all like North Korea basically laid it out. I mean, fuck North Korea. I'd nuke them off the face of the earth.
Really, North Korea, though?
You know, I mean, but that, I don't know. But that's what they did. I mean, and they exposed it to the world, and immediately all these Jews went into
blame the whites mode. They did it with slavery.
Exactly. It was,
they did it with slavery. The Jews running the transatlantic slave trade for the most part, owning a bunch of the slaves, a disproportionate amount to the regular white Americans. And blaming it all on white people. They do this all the damn time. It's pretty frustrating because everybody buys it. The blacks don't even seem to see a difference between whites and Jews. Some of the more educated ones do. But they're able to get away with this scam where blame white people for the crimes of the Jews. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, the slavery thing is particularly maddening. And one thing I would recommend some people, if they like to get really mad, and I enjoy getting mad, one publication I would recommend was the Jewish Daily Forward. And in that, basically the entire narrative is laid out. You know?
Really?
They're just saying it.
I'm doing that every day, I think.
Oh, you were talking about it. You said they had an article published in it where they basically admitted that they had a disproportionate role in slavery. And that surprised me, because for years I had always been told that that was like, oh, that's the stereotype and it's all photoshopped, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, the interesting thing is I never even really knew that until recently. But once I learned that, it made perfect sense that Jews were disproportionately. And in terms of slave owners, they were disproportionate in the South. In terms of slave traders, they were very disproportionately represented versus their population.
No,
in the United
I had
States
seen
at
that going
time,
around
like,
for a while, but I didn't believe it. And I had refused to believe it because there were all these sites refuting it. And then when you told me about it, I was like, man, that kind of like shakes
and
me
and
up.
The Jewish Daily Forward is interesting because they were sort of like, should we acknowledge the Jewish role in the slave trade? And then they were sort of like, nah.
Nah, let the goyim feel guilty for it.
Yeah, it's like what – it was sort of like they came to the idea like, what good would it do now to uncover this?
I don't know.
But it's also like –
9-year-old SS officers in putting
yeah,
on
what
trial.
Good, right. Yeah, what good does it Christ. Do to track down a 90-year-old ex?
It makes cat ladies' ginas tickle. That's it.
Well, what good would it do to stop the Israeli sex slave trade of white women from Eastern Europe? I mean, why bring up Jewish slavery? You know, you don't want people looking into current day crimes. And it's just it's amazing they're able to sell this narrative where 1.4%. of white people in reality at the height of slavery in America owned slaves. The percentage was higher in the South, something like 4.something%. But just a small, small percentage of white people in America owning slaves. And yet today, the descendants of those people were supposed to all feel collectively guilty for this and possibly even pay reparations beyond affirmative action and the rest. It's just incredible. While current-day slavery exists, where tens of millions of African slaves are enslaved by other Africans today, where Jews have sex slaves kept in Israel, it's acknowledged, where slavery is all over the planet.
They don't write novels with the word nigger in it, so, you know, we have Mark Twain who's allowed to do that. That makes it, that's it
worse. We need to censor that. We'll just censor that.
To touch on something that was said about, you think it's good to be a little edgy. I agree to the extent that, like, what is perceived as being edgy, I wouldn't even consider being edgy, but is rather it's perceived as being edgy. That's just it's just not playing the game or refusing refusing to play in the liberal game. It's when you stop playing in the game, then people. You know, I see, you know, oh, that's edgy and shit thrown out all the time when people ask basic questions like, why is equality a good thing?
Yeah. Well, why is diversity?
Like, wow, you're just trying to be edgy. It's like, but can you answer the question?
Yeah, it's right. Like, you're a racist. Well, why is that bad? Tell me why that's bad.
Like, that sounds racist.
I love
that.
I love just asking, why is it wrong to prefer to be around people like yourself?
Is it wrong? No.
Healthy, natural instincts that we've had for thousands and thousands of years are not really edgy. To be honest, they're pretty normal. It's just that in this sick world, they're now considered extreme.
With liberals, you can be like, okay, so it's wrong to prefer to be around your own kind. So I presume you don't live in a white area?
Oh, listen here, shitlord. That's the
I'm going to assume you don't actually live in a white suburb.
Gated community, yeah. Well, actually, let's go to a quick break here. This one is only 50 seconds, but we'll be right back after this brief song.
Because I'm edgy, is it edgier to hate cops or to defend them for killing blacks? Because I'm edgy, is it edgier to like Bush or should I bring Nixon back? Because I'm edgy, is it edgier to support setting Palestine free? I'm edgy, or is it edgier to support the Jewish BNP? Because I'm edgy. Clap along if you feel like a vibrant culture you because I'm edgy. Clap along if you feel like edginess is the truth. Because I'm edgy. Clap along if you know what edginess is to you. I'm edgy. Clap along if you feel like that's what you wanna do.
All right, that was Meraquio. Meraquio with the Edgetarian song. And Meraquio is a special contributor to your show. He still does his Merchant Minute, correct?
Yeah, that was weird. That was a weird... I'm getting a little echo here. Hello? Okay. Yeah, that was weird how that came up. We did the first couple episodes of the show, and I don't know, just for some reason, like in the last like 10 minutes, we ended up talking about the JQ, and I jokingly said to Mike, like, "Hey, this could be a feature we do every week, the Jewish Minute with Michael." And then somebody in the group said Merchant Minute was better because we love alliteration, and it was just like, "All right, we'll have Meraquio because that was his thing anyway," and he hasn't stopped. Like every week, I don't have to like prod him. I don't have to shame him. I don't have to yell at him. And just the morning of the show recording, his Merchant Minute is in my inbox. It's ready to go, and he's awesome. And I hate to like, you know, it sucks to have to like own up to this, but there are a ton of people that I think they don't listen to the show. They just tune in, they download it, and they grab the merch. They listen to the Merchant
Minute. That was true at first. At the beginning of our show, the show content wasn't always, and our audio quality wasn't always up to snuff.
Right.
And his bit was the best thing. And I remember reading comments on some of the earlier shows, and people were like, "Yes, the Merchant Minute was so great." And I was like, but what about the rest of the show? But I think the rest of our show has caught up, and now I see that in the comments people are discussing the main content. Although, you know, I think our content has gotten better. The Merchant Minute has been consistently great. Our other content has gotten better.
Every week, you know, it's like the last couple weeks, Mike, you've said like, oh, well, we just shitposted for 2.5 hours and in 3 minutes, you just blew us the fuck out.
Yeah, that was in particular last week, I have to say. He did. Yeah.
He does it. It's great. He's amazing.
And, you know, it's interesting. His last Merchant Minute was 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Because there was so much shit that happened that week. And it's like, I feel like the length of the Merchant Minute is just gonna have to keep getting longer and longer as the narrative goes into overdrive.
You know,
more and more shit happens every week.
We used to have a caller here on the network who would call into all these shows, and no matter what they were talking about, all he would do is talk about mohels. How it is absolutely insane. Absolutely insane that we live in a country where we allow grown men to mutilate the genitals of baby boys and then put their mouths on their penises. How we allow these Jewish men to do this, it's you know, a crime against whatever. It's spiritually bankrupting us. So eventually I just said, okay, listen, I want to stay on topic, so why don't we have the Mohel Minute, or Moil, however you want to say it. It's spelled Mohel. Mohel. So we had the Moil Minute for some time. So I don't think you guys took that, but it's just amazing that we came to a similar type of
Great minds think alike. I had never heard of that before, so we didn't. Awesome. But you know, whatever.
The Moil Minute.
I mean, you know, what do they call it when people come up with the same good idea at the same time? I don't know.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah, the hundredth monkey type of thing.
Great minds think a kike.
Yeah. Right.
No.
Great minds think of kikes.
think of kike.
If you put like the million monkeys in a room with a million typewriters and eventually type out Hamlet or something like that, I don't know. I can't remember exactly.
We have callers. I'm like super excited. I'm jealous. Like, you can have callers. We have to figure out how to do that. Do we have it? Is anyone going to ask a question off the cuff? I mean,
let's encourage that. 347-633-9657. Again, 347-633-9657. Folks, please do call in. How about we touch upon something that I haven't yet covered on my show? I do these interviews with, you know, sometimes very serious guests who have written a book, so it's very focused on that topic. So I don't get to talk about things like the cuckspiracy. We talk about the cuckspiracy, Bella and the Bulldogs. Now, cuckoldry is something that has been talked about on the image boards for a long time. Now, you know, just in the general, Meraki has that cuck song, Cucktails. And this was out before the cuckspiracy came to light. Can you tell us, whoever would like to jump in and tell us?
I think I'm the only person who's actually really skeptical about all of that.
That's cool, anyway. Talking?
Yeah. Okay, because when I see it, obviously I think that it's weird that they let a guy who, you know, wrote a cuck book make a kid's show. That's weird to me. But that aside, when I look at the show, it just looks like just another standard, you know, shitty Nickelodeon kid show with your standard slightly leftist undertones, multicultural friendship crap, you know.
If I didn't know his background, I think it was just Belle and the Bulldykes, you know, where it's teaching a young girl to go out and be a football player. But seeing that this guy directed some kind of pornographic cuckold fetish film, he even mentioned in some comments on social media that it's incredibly he's going to be able to go in and warp these young minds. And there was even an image of him standing in front of the Nick sign, and they rearranged the letters to make it say kink. So I take a very negative view as to what's coming out of these kids' stations.
That's a real photo of him doing that?
I think it is. And also, I mean, just the black guy with the white girl and the effeminate man. I mean, that's the situation he's setting up. He's liked all these interracial porn stars on Facebook. It all seems to add up. I mean, think about how many times this whole – ideas promoted in the media through the movies and also commercials, especially, you know, with the kind of Old Spice Jack Shower guy, you know, and knocking out the white guy. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was if he did try to slip in little things like that to, you know, make himself feel satisfied sexually or something. But when I look at the show and I think about a kid watching it, they wouldn't pick up on those things, I don't believe.
Well, no, but what they're going to pick up on is they're going to get the idea that, you know, race mixing is wonderful. Race mixing is the ideal. We shouldn't be.
Right. You know, right.
We shouldn't have the in-group preference. And
that's far beyond that show. That's like all the
kids. That's like everything.
I'm going to get in there. Like, I'm going to try to keep my kids away from these kind of tween sitcoms as it is. But this is definitely the worst one.
I think there's
multiple bullshit narratives going on at once. You got this girl on the football team. You've got the race cucking. You've got the Jewish good guy in there. And but all the, like, the numerology and all the things that I was seeing on, like, 8chan and with, like, the Common Filth was sharing with us. It's like, I was kind of like, all right, they're kind of reaching and kind of looking for things.
Yeah, I thought
there's like a few narratives going on.
I'm not gonna say that the whole thing is bullshit. I don't know if you're saying that really cool.
I'm not saying the whole thing is bullshit. I'm saying that I'm skeptical, but at the same time, I acknowledge that there's a lot of fucking, you know, I acknowledge the standard liberal crap that's in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
stuff with, like, the numbers, like, the, you know, the black guy's a jersey that has number 7. They're like, biblically, that's the number for perfection. And it's like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah. That stuff.
There's a few possibilities. Like, the idea that there's people sitting in a boardroom, like, literally rubbing hands, planning it, I'm not so sure about. But, I mean, who knows? But I do think that it's worse than that. What's really happening is, in a way, worse than that. Because they're not, like, a bunch of guys sitting there, like, on this one show, we're going to, like, sit here and plan out the destruction of the white race. But it's that, like, on all shows, just because of the intellectual climate, there's an agenda to be like, we need a major black character. We need to show a girl doing boy things. You know, and so they've like wrapped it all together. And I do think that there's some weird stuff about this particular show. And I actually think, I'll be honest with you, I actually don't think the numerology shit is that far-fetched. Because if the guy is going to insert little troll points, like if the guy who's the creator of the show is going to insert little stuff for his own personal satisfaction is like, I'm pulling one over on them, it's going to be that kind of thing. So, like, the girl's number 1, the black kid's number 8, the white kid's number 99. I mean, I can actually even see that. The fact that, like, the girl's in the middle while, like, the black kid's got his arm around the girl and, like, a much smaller white kid. And it all looks weird, right? But when you actually watch the show, sure, it's just a shitty Nickelodeon show. I saw a couple clips.
And there's a lot of white kids in it that are white kids. It's just that he's supposed to be, like, the dweeb that has no friend.
Quick point is that Jews love numerology. And when you are doing any kind of show, I used to work in theater. I used to design sets. I did this in college as well. Sounds pretty faggy, I know. But, you know, I like...
It shouldn't, though. I mean, theater's a great Western tradition.
But it's become such shit. It really has. And even some of the plays I was doing. But the point is that every single thing that you see in a movie or on a TV show or whatever was intentionally placed there. Absolutely nothing is at random. And people who do work in the media, especially the kind of Aleister Crowley types, you know, you hear all about them, they love messing around with numbers and everything. It's just like, it's a kind of a little fun game. And they put little Easter eggs, they used to be called, when the internet was in the early stages in the 90s. But now, you know, people call it all sorts of different things. You know,
we still call things, or whatever, you know. As a software developer, I put Easter eggs in products sometimes, and like if you do like this keystroke, you can unlock it's like a funny thing that happens. I've done that a few times.
When
I only did that in theory, but I completely buy that the producer of the show was putting Easter eggs in there, and that the numbers on the jerseys and the positions of the characters were an Easter egg. I definitely think so, but generally, I think that the show just pushes general liberal narratives. There's one clip of the show I saw where the girl is like, I'm going to be on the football team. And they're like, you're going to be on the football team? You're a girl on the football team? And then, like, her two friends, one of whom's Asian, the other of whom is black, girls, say, like, not only are you a girl on the football team, but you're doing it in Texas. So that's twice as hard. So you can't tell me there's not, like, liberals inserting their shit into the show. But, of course, that would be, like, everything on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you just watch commercials on TV, you will see these ridiculously vibrant and diverse like groups of friends doing things together, just stupid shit to sell products. It's like no,
but one of every demographic group
is represented. Every commercial is like,
it's like polo shirts,
yeah,
like
two black shorts, an Asian girl, and yeah.
Okay, so
all sitcoms. Like, all sitcoms, have you ever seen, like, when's the last time you saw a sitcom that had a husband that was portrayed as being smart?
Never.
Or, I mean, you know, doesn't exist.
Huh? Husband's a buffoon since Archie Bunker,
when's the
right?
Last time you even saw a freaking sitcom that portrayed an intact family? Actually, there's one.
Goldbergs.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's only one, and it's the freaking Goldbergs. Other than that, there is no intact families on sitcoms. There were 10 years ago.
Oh, what's that one? There's one that's on before. It's this Midwest family from like Indiana, and they're white, and they're intact, they're just weird. I can't remember what it's called.
What about the new normal? That's what they're always trying to push. The show. There's a show out there. And it's got all sorts of degeneracy in it, but just this idea of the new normal. That's the way that they do things. Is it's like you better get used to it because this is the new normal. You're going to see trannies all over the place. Oh, the modern family. But
that's supposed to be the new normal with the ridiculously stereotypical gay couple adopting the Chinese girl, and that's supposed to be fine, and everything's fine, everything's wonderful. Yeah. And
the new normal. I remember what that show was actually about. It was
Show?
This poor white woman goes out to California, and she needs to make ends meet because she has this daughter, and the way that she does so to make some money is she becomes a surrogate mother for two gays. And it's a comedy. And it's just
normal. That always ends in fun and laughs.
Yeah. We've got a poor white woman who has to sell her womb to two gays who have all the money to be able to raise a little gaby.
I'm sure white women never have
I'm gay.
Attachment to one's personal attachment to what comes out of their womb after 9 months of... Yeah, that works.
Oh, man.
So
it's
empowering.
The biggest market in the world.
All right, I'll stop with that. I'm sorry.
Kai, I want to add something here.
Yes.
Oh.
Meow Blitz.
Yeah. Meow. Okay, so, listen, this whole thing about Bella and the Bulldogs, you know, I saw a Common Filth video. It's probably one of the best representations of it. There's also
several articles. Are you offended by the dog normative narratives of Bell and the Dog? There's no cats in it.
Yeah. So there was also several articles on the Daily Stormer and so on. And the whole thing is like, who cares if it's some conspiratard theory? I don't care. The whole point is, all right, if you want to attack your enemies, you'll attack them at any point. And I just, you know. Okay, it's kind of like when Daily Stormer did a raid on what's his name, Alex Jones. You know, it's like this guy is peddling all these ridiculous conspiracy theories or whatever. It's like you kind of see where I'm coming from.
Overall, it's just that the standard liberal crap is all I'm sick of. It's like Bell and the Bulldogs. It's like when I look at it, I don't see anything different. And you can dig a little deeper and be like, there might be little hidden things. And it's like, it doesn't matter because kids aren't going to see
right,
it.
Like, if you were to gather an army of like crazy people, you know, a lot of if you were to gather an army against your enemy, a lot of them are going to incorporate a lot of crazy people who are like, I look at numbers and I stare at the moon and, you know, there's all this weird, I have my rune stones laid out or whatever. You know, it's like, who cares? As long as you're attacking the enemy, that's what matters.
Well, so, I actually live near Orlando where maybe it's Nickelodeon really is still headquartered. And I would love to go down there and just troll them somehow. Now, let's actually talk about this as idea of trolling as a tactic. Are you guys all for the notion of trolling our enemies into submission?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Depends, of course. Who's your enemy? Yeah. Are you talking about cat ladies?
Anyone. Anyone that you're going after. I have trolled Jews in a number of instances. Social justice warriors, you know, trolling blacks, trolling whoever.
I will say, like, one of the most rewarding things is, in a snark, if you're in the right mood anyway, being snarkily predicting every talking point that, like, the snarky liberal is going to say, but you already know them, and you just deliver it with even more snark. That's probably the most gratifying.
So well. Because then you've cut them off the mess. They don't know what the hell to do next.
Our other death panel contributor, Hateful Heretic, he has said there's, like, there's really no reason to engage with the enemy in debate unless your goal is just liberal tears. It's
that's a good goal. I mean, sometimes that's what you want. But
it's good for morale.
Yeah, it's good for morale.
If you can trick a liberal into typing nigger or faggot into a Facebook comment so that you can report that comment and get them banned, that's another really good tack.
Well, usually what you do is you go into I don't have Alex here. Our pal Alex McNabb is like the expert on some of these tactics. He's written a manual. Unfortunately, he's been very busy doing some stuff recently. But you know, he's got some ideas. Like, you go into like a heavily moderated group and you obey all the rules to the letter. You just make points that they're not. You know, you don't say nigger. You don't say any racial slurs. You just you back up everything with evidence. Like, there are some rules groups that even say, like, you have to provide, if you're making factual claims, you have to provide evidence and stuff. So you can do all that, and you get them to start raging on you, and you get them banned. That's always extremely satisfying. Yeah. You get them to break the rules, and then they get banned. He used to do that constantly. It's fun to watch.
And you straight up get banned anyway. And I like how all of those groups that are heavily moderated but are always, you know, that are vastly liberal are always titled something like open debate forums or like intellectual conversations.
Yeah, like open political debate. We mean it.
Yeah. You catch them off the game, then you're gone in a second.
We actually shut down. We troll raided a Facebook group that was called something like actually open political debate. And we went in there and we actually openly politically debated in the whole forum. It was such a blowout that the moderator deleted the forum.
That's the one where I got banned before I even got added. I was like, what happened?
Do you remember that? What was that one called? I can't even remember. It doesn't matter. But it was something like that.
I don't know. Some snarky.
Something like that. It was a few months ago. Yeah. But
then you have the actual openly trollish groups themselves, like Open Borders for Israel.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. And you there's know, people I think, that then also adopt other people's identities, or they open a Twitter as somebody that they're not.
I see a lot of Rachels. Rachel Dolezal there now. Now, actually, I'd like to talk a little bit about her. I'm guessing you're going to bring her up on your show next week.
We're going to do a bit on her probably tomorrow night, too, but we can talk.
Definitely.
How about just a brief news report to fill people in a little bit. This is coming from MSNBC, and it's a very eloquent black man named Al Sharpton. He's just a shining example of black intellectualism. So let's go to him to learn a little bit more about this.
Finally tonight, a few words about the controversy surrounding an NAACP leader out of Washington. Rachel Dolezal is president of the group's chapter in Spokane. Her parents shocked a lot of people when they came forward to say she's been misrepresenting herself as black for years. Dolezal says the question of a race is not as easy as it seems, but she ended a local interview when asked about it.
Are you African American?
I don't understand the question of, I did tell you that, yes, that's my dad. And he was unable to come in January.
Are your parents, are they white?
Today, the NAACP put out a statement saying, quote, Rachel Dolezal is enduring a legal issue with her family, and we respect her privacy in this matter. One's racial identity is not a qualifying criteria or disqualifying standard for NAACP leadership. I think you should always be truthful about who you are. And I understand that people may be angry if she lied about that. But I also think everyone should remember that there's a long history of integrated activism in the civil rights movement. We saw this at the March on Washington, on the Freedom Rides, on the road from Selma to Montgomery. We also saw people who lost their lives in the struggle, like Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwerner, and Viola Luiso. In fact, earlier this year, I was honored to give a social justice award to Viola Luiso's daughter, Mary. So while transparency and honesty should always be looked for, let us not be confused. It was always blacks and whites that fought together. So her race is not a determining factor. Her honesty should be the only thing that we discuss.
Honesty?
All right.
I mean, so lying is not honesty. I don't care that. Fine, you can have white activists in the NAACP. You can't have people lying about who they are. I mean, why is this so hard?
Well,
crap,
the interesting thing
is they denied this.
Trannies are lying about who they are. This woman is lying about it. And by the way, if blacks are teens, if this woman is pretending to be black, is she a tween? Is that what we're going to call her? This is fucking terrible. I'm so triggered by this thing. I don't want to stop. Stop talking over. God damn it. This is ridiculous.
Okay, no, keep
this
going.
Guy is a fucking moron, and he's on national television. All that. He's got a radio show. He gets to spout this shit. I have to hide in my basement after my kids go to sleep behind a fake fucking name to talk about my common sense white nationalist. If I say it too loud, my neighbors might hear me. Conclusions about the shit going on. And he is allowed to openly say on the air, and people listen to it, that it... race doesn't matter to get into the NAACP. People, you have to be honest about who you are when she is blatantly not being honest about who she was. What am I living in right now? What is this? I'm done.
The interesting thing.
I forgot one last thing. I have to just do it again. Because that is exactly how I feel.
I mean, he should have said,
"Your punishment must be more severe."
but no,
I like how the entire premise, yeah, is just they just pretend like it didn't happen.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, like it's really interesting. I was noting this today that the social justice movement is like lining up to defend her. They are starting to coalesce around a narrative that is like in defense of her. And as we just heard, Al Sharpton do it, and the NAACP did it. And one of the more interesting wrinkles to this whole thing is that she was probably a more articulate and effective speaker for black issues than most black people themselves.
Of course.
And I saw an article, and that's why she rose to the top. And I saw an article on Jezebel today that was one of these where I started to think, so they're not throwing her under the bus. They're going to bring her out from under the bus, or whatever a metaphor for that is. So and the writer was writing, I couldn't tell by the name, it was some stupid name, I couldn't tell, but she was writing as if she's writing in like black girl slang, like, you go girl, you know, like that type of shit. And so she's writing about her, and the main thing was about how she's like, one thing I'll say about Rachel Dolezal, her hair game was on point. I'll pretend I'm a LARP as a black woman for this. She's like, that girl's hair game was on point. Maybe that was Puerto Rican, but whatever. So she's saying like her hair was really good. And then she linked to a YouTube video of Dolezal giving a lecture on the history of black women's hair and the struggles that black women have had with their hair. And the even more interesting, she's like, she knows what she's talking about. She knows the history of, she actually knows a lot about black culture and internal black culture that most white people don't know about. And then, like, the struggles that black women have with their hair. Of course, she had to LARP as a black, so she had to get the hair right, you know? And she was like, and she got her hair right, and it looked good, and, like, she had all these different black hairstyles. Like, she had, like, the kinky curls, she had dreadlocks, she put, like, her hair in a wrap, and all these different pictures of her. And I was like, wow, so she, like, does black better than blacks.
And nobody could tell. All those blacks. All those blacks she was working with. The prosecutor.
Well, they didn't want to say anything. I looked at her and I'm like, that's a white woman with, she got a bad perm.
But like, you're just a bronzer. But you're just connected with this
your
Mosby.
Nose. Your nose is straight. Your nose is pointy. You're not black. It's
well, people might have just assumed, okay, this woman has, you know, maybe half, probably less black in her. But because of the white supremacist society that just alienates anybody who's not pure white, oh, she just has to, you know, identify with black, and, you know, she's going to advocate for them. So it's a good thing. Go ahead.
No, here's something that has been discussed on the website numerous times before, and I don't remember the exact author of the article. It might have been the Pokemon who straight away, but apparently there was this art exhibit done by these Russians, these Russian artists, where it was like a white Russian woman who was sitting on a black woman.
Yes, okay.
You know, like she was a chair or something, and everybody was like super offended by this, like, oh, this is so marginalizing, like, oh, white oppression, et cetera, et cetera. And then, like, all these like, leftist, like, gay, you know, because in Russia, at the very least, I will say this, like, open homosexuality is legal, you know, but they, you know, they made this, like, really edgy, dangerous art where it's, like, this, you know, muscly black gay man, like, sitting on this white gay man or something. And look, this is supposed to be edgy. This is really supposed to be really subversive and just dangerous to the narrative. And I was like, okay. So I was joking around. You know, it's kind of like, okay, so let's say you had this art gallery, you know, and you have, like, Picasso paintings and so on. You know, everybody's like, oh, this is so subversive. This is so, this is really sticking it to the man and so on. All you have to do is walk into the art gallery and say, like, you know, gas the kikes, race war now, I hate niggers. And that would be like the most shocking thing they ever heard in their life. And they would want to,
of course, yeah,
kill you.
Of course.
Because that's of course. Because, right, because it's like, whatever you do, like, you know, the far right is always going to be more subversive and edgy. And that's even why when you see, like, far-left people like Foucault or Zizek or whatever, they're always going to, like, oh, look at me. I'm dipping my toes in the water of the extreme right. You know, like, I'm, oh, look at this edgy thing. Oh, I read Heidegger. I read Heidegger, and, oh, I hang out with the Iranian Ayatollah and some, you know, it's like the far right is always going to be more subversive.
Well, but what do you guys think about the whole comparison? We just had Bruce Jenner coming out as Caitlyn Jenner. Everybody's saying that's great, that's perfect.
And then he goes Republican.
Yeah, but we're supposed to also, I guess, accept this whole wrong skin thing, the transracialism. I mean, if people can switch genders, I wasn't born into the right gender. Well, you could switch races. I wasn't born into the right white race. Right.
Yeah. It's funny that's they're going to have a hard time. And we've seen the left is now starting to rally behind this woman. And, you know, despite the fact that I think she actually has a problem, like a mental illness.
It's called mind-sharking.
She's probably because they see her as now a woman in a vulnerable position, and yes, who makes up and the vast majority of, you know, social justice warriors are just like shitty women who have, you know, like their personal
cat ladies,
issues.
Here's the thing. Cat ladies identifying with her. You know what I mean? You're right. She's a woman in a vulnerable position, and cat ladies are going to look at her and they're going to identify more so than not.
Yeah.
White or black.
Well, we know they think about her hair,
but at the same time, I really hope that they do rally behind her.
They will. They already have started.
I know. I hope they take it as far as they can, because if they take it as far as they can, and it becomes, you know, then there's this new thing about being transracial or something. If that actually becomes a thing, it's like then I have so many new play toys.
And you know, it's like, it's going to be very difficult for them to navigate this, because how do you say you're not black if you think you're black? How do you say that if you believe you're a woman, if you think you're a woman? I mean, it's kind of like, I guess, because, you know, as white males, we have this patriarchal sense of, you know, Aristotelian logic, where we think that consistency is important. I mean, that's a thing. So we're like, hey, look, here's a point where you, you know, but to some extent, the left does not care about consistency.
Yes,
but, of course.
Yeah, Meow Mix, isn't there like a troll Twitter account who's calling himself wrong skinned and he's just trolling the hell? And I mean, there's black activists dealing with that, is there not? People are just telling him, no, yes, you're not.
It's like Gottfried Alf. I don't remember exact name. Apparently, from what I've researched, is that he's like some super reactionary from England or whatever. But I mean, it's brilliant. And I've even shared on my in real life account, and people are just cracking up.
But people are having no problem yelling at him that he's not black, that it's bullshit, right? I mean, they are able to mount some kind of resistance to it. It's not just, I believe Mike was asking like how they're going to have a hard time navigating this and debating against it, if they're going to erase racial identity. I mean, they're having no problem.
I mean, he keeps running with it. He just keeps adding to it, and it's just so fucking funny. So I mean, he just keeps humming on it. Like he even made this like Photoshop picture of him, like from what is it, like Occupy Wall Street, where he's like, you know, I even think in the picture it was like some black cops wrestling a white guy now, and he's like, you know, as wrong skin, you know, as a young black male, I face this every day. Yeah, and then he said something crazy along the lines of like, you know, skin color has nothing to do with perception of skin color, or just like something totally retarded, and it was hilarious.
Well, I think there's sort of like, you know how in the feminist movement there's the TERFs, or trans exclusionary radical feminism, those feminists that are anti-trans. I think you're going to get some pro-black holdouts in the black movement, to the extent such a thing exists, where you'll get some black women and maybe black men that are attacking Dolezal for, you know, LARPing as a black woman. But I think the mainstream, just like in the mainstream of feminism, is trans accepting and, you know, gender fluid and all that shit. The mainstream is always going to go for anybody can be whatever they want, you know, because like fundamentally, like hard identity politics is anathema to them no matter what. And so if you go too far with pro-black, you're actually getting into black identity politics that could potentially spur white identity politics in response. And that's what we can't have. And the same thing, you know, with TERFs, trans exclusionary radical feminists, they've been excommunicated because they're saying, no, female is a biological class of people, which is true. You know, and they're sort of insisting on that. They might be completely batshit in other areas, but they're at least insisting on this biological distinction, which that's what you're not supposed to do.
Go ahead.
I know, I was finished.
Okay, well, there's a college that is I used to go to a college right next to this one. It's Smith College, all-girls school. Of course, men aren't allowed to have all-men's schools anymore. But Smith, this all-girls school, they just recently came out and said, We're going to accept men who identify as women, but we will not accept women who identify as men, biological women, because they're men, and this is an all-woman school.
Wasn't this the topic of an early Shitlord report, Jesse?
What if they're gender fluid? So what if when they get into the school, what if they're a woman then, but then later they become a man? Then do they get expelled or?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works. But we got a call here, so let's see what this call has to say. This is Jeb from Birmingham, Alabama. Jeb, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I find this Rachel Dolezal thing pretty hilarious, because it seems to me that like what you have here is this little white girl. And she looks around at the world that she's, in this day and age, and realizes, you know, the black community just has a dearth of good leadership. And so she says to herself, you know, these niggers ain't doing it right. I think I can do it better.
Yes.
And, she goes out and puts on blackface and actually out advocates the black advocates. Is that not like the height of white supremacy? I mean,
yes,
you know, this,
yes,
this lady here who
yes.
is not black.
Absolutely, because, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, she's not black, but she's going to tell black women how to properly do their hair and all this and the other, and then, you know.
she's a white supremacist.
Seems like a very
yes.
condescending attitude to have, you know.
She's a white supremacist. I think that's a great way to frame it.
That's the most hysterical thing about it. She is better at being a black activist than they are.
Yeah, therefore, exactly. Sharpton is a white supremacist.
She got as far as she did because she's white. Yeah, and Sharpton knows it.
Sharpton is
a great weapon.
The fact, so yeah, they're all white supremacists now. And this is great. This is a TRS narrative: is that white supremacy is self-evident. There's no way around it. It's just it anywhere it gets the chance, it shows itself. And here we are again. Very good point.
It's just amazing the timing of this all. It's just one thing piling on top of another. Race has become so important in the past few years. I mean, it's been under the surface somewhat, especially ever since Obama got elected. But the past few years, it's just ridiculous. Everything is race. All these riots.
Well, it's because it's. I mean, you could say to some extent it's because he won a second term. I mean, certainly the Justice Department has amped up the racial stuff since Obama's second term was won. They're pushing harder, and I mean, I remember the George W. Bush years, and I don't remember race explosions happening.
No.
But it seems like now they are happening. And maybe it was just because we were sort of on top of a ticking time bomb and now it's exploded. But
it's not
as explosive as it has been in this country. That's the thing. Like there's much worse or better, depending on your point of view, coming down the road, because Ferguson and Baltimore were not much in comparison with 1968.
Right. Well, the thing is that basically, the actions of the government and of the media have created this.
Yes.
They've allowed it to take place, and they're arresting fewer and fewer black criminals in all these cities, and the violent crime is skyrocketing. In Baltimore alone, it's just been record levels for over a decade or something. Just all these murders occurring, and they're not arresting people. And you've got this hands-off policy making its way into the school districts as well, where they're not allowed to basically get black kids in trouble.
That was a direct result of Eric Holder and the Justice Department, and that was a new thing since Obama won his second term, that they started pushing that. They're like, no, now black children are suspended, expelled, punished, disciplined at a higher rate. And this is obviously racist. It's like, I went to school with 40% black kids. I can tell you it is not racist. These kids, and even if it was, it wouldn't matter. But it's not, because the black kids, they're bad. They misbehave all the freaking time. They won't sit still. They yell. They run around. It's so much. All the entire – half of the effort, probably more than half the effort of the school, is just to control them.
Yeah.
Just to contain them for a few hours a day.
And when you kind of let go of the leash, these dogs run wild. It's I mean, you're encouraging it. They're encouraging this, applauding it. You have Salon saying, writing articles about when it's morally justified to riot and burn police cars.
Yeah,
it wasn't justified when I did some pro-white activism. When I organized some pro-white activism, that was basically the most evil thing ever. It was all completely legal. No one got hurt except for one of our activists who did get beat up by anti-racist action in Illinois. It was Chicago's anti-racist action. So we were the victims there. The point is that they're willing to push this narrative where it's okay if blacks riot, burn down a city, burn police cars, and commit violence against white people. They were really running absolutely wild. And that's okay. That's a political statement. But white people handing out literature, putting up a sign, oy vey, oy gavalt.
Yeah. Well, this is what Sam Francis called anarcho-tyranny, where the sort of lower segments of society experience a form of anarchism, if not direct, you know, they're encouraged in their anarchic behavior. They're encouraged to, when they riot, they're given space to destroy, you know, all this thing. But you step out of line a little bit, and your career is on the line. You know, you're going to get audited. You're going to get arrested. And your employer is going to hear about it, etc. So, and now they've got social justice activists on Twitter that are just out there looking to find people like us and find our documents and send them to our employers and make sure we can't make a living.
Oh, then they spend money on this. I mean, of course, there's Hasbara, you know, which is open. They're openly having a Hasbara campaign from Israel, but all sorts of different state departments are involved in this. And of course they're, you know, setups, stings and all the rest. But a lot of this trolling of us, a lot of this espionage against us is oftentimes paid for with our own tax dollars, which is, you know, pretty much a kick in the nuts. But anyway,
I want to add something to what our caller said.
Yes. Meowblitz.
Cause he was talking about, he's like, oh, you know, maybe that white chick, you know, she felt more authentic as black and she wanted to be black. Well, I remember, I'm sure we've all read or at least heard of it, is Stuff White People Like by Christian Lander. You know, that's where we get the word swipple. And I don't remember exactly what number it was, but he was talking about how, like, one of the swipple things is knowing more about your culture than you do. So it's kind of like white people signaling that they know more about black culture or, you know, any other culture on the planet is like, white people, oh, I understand more than you. And that's actually been my experience is like white people are like, oh, you're Chinese? Let me tell you about your the whole history of the...
I did that to some Japanese guys once.
And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
They were actually pretty impressed. I was talking about Japanese mythology, you know, because I've studied all sorts of crazy things, read all sorts of books and everything. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, how the hell do you know any of this? And I was like, because I'm not a stupid, dumb, goy American. Because I'm actually, you know.
Well, that's like, I had an Indian girl in high school. And it's like I knew like the entirety of not only Indian history but like the whole Hindu religion, and she was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Well, and the thing is that we're branded as these closed-minded, you know, redneck hillbillies where we just are so uneducated. And if we finally got a clue, we'd realize that diversity is the greatest thing ever. When in fact, some of our people are really well-versed in all sorts of different cultures around the world and actually enjoy the real diversity of the planet.
And this most important part is many of them are ex-leftists. And this is the thing that I find remarkable is, okay, when you're dealing with the mainstream, right, like, you know, people from, like, Nash Review and Breitbart, et cetera, they're all fucking retarded. You know, they're dumb as shit. But when you're dealing with, like, the edgy and the alt-right and national socialist, white national neo-reactionaries, etc., not only are not, you know, most of them are, like, so high IQ, they're autistic and retarded. You know, they're just out there on another planet. But, you know, you're dealing with people that, you know, a lot of them have college degrees, you know, master's degrees, PhDs, and a lot of them are just ex-leftists. They're ex-Marxists, ex-Trotskyites. They know what they're talking about, and that's just what leftists don't understand.
Are you saying we have to be ex-leftists in order to be smart?
No.
Saying that only ex-leftists
are just saying,
smart.
No, not all of them. I'm just saying, like, a lot of them that I've encountered.
You know. All right, we've got a few more callers on the line now, so I just want to go back to Jeb. Jeb, see if Jeb had anything else he'd like to add, and then we'll get to the other guys.
No, man. As a matter of fact, it's going to get pretty loud around here. You can go ahead and mute me. And
all right. Continue to listen. Sounds good.
Hey, man. Thanks, Jeb. Good talking to you, man.
All right. So we've got this other caller here from a 315. Not sure who this is. 315. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Nick. I'm calling from Hawaii.
Nick, welcome to the show.
Mahalo.
Good. I just wanted, mahalo. Just wanted to add, as an ex-leftist myself, I think people will flip over pretty quickly once they get the truth. I don't think it'll take long. I think there's a lot of people out there. And I just wanted to mention about the media and their lies. I think the police are very aware of the fact that the media consistently mischaracterizes these situations where somebody gets killed in some inner city. And I think this media lying and media ownership is an issue that people should work on and try to get into the hands of people in the police department that they know or can reach out to. Those guys are getting screwed over by the media, and I just think it's a very important group that we should be trying to make contacts with. That's all I wanted to say. Interesting show. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, I gotta really agree with that. I mean, I you know that cops know that what the media does with this stuff is BS. Right. You
they
know
see the
that
worst
they,
of the worst.
And they know it on a level that we can never know it because they've seen it firsthand, and then they've seen what the media does with it.
They
so
have
I
to
completely
take
agree.
And hope it doesn't get caught on camera phone video. You know, I mean, they're in a special, very special spot.
Well, what they want to hope is that the total context of it doesn't that just one piece of it missing context doesn't get caught. So it's like the point at which they're holding down on the ground some dindu. And then you don't see the previous 5 minutes where that person was being violent and uncooperative. You
hey,
only
we
see the minute or 30 seconds where they're being held on the ground, you know, by maybe more than one cop or something like that. So, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to see if you guys would be willing to stay on for just a little bit more. We have a little bit of a break coming up as we go into the third hour here. And I'd like to talk about your standard pool party, which occurred recently. Don't want to go into any great depth because people can just go listen to your latest show where you do cover this. It takes you a while to get to it, just like it took us a while tonight. But it's something that just goes to show how this media narrative is completely biased against the police and how blacks didn't do nothing wrong. So what I'd like to do is go to a song here to kind of set this stage, in my opinion. This is also by Merakyu. I'm going to play Who Let the Zog Out.
And, oh, yeah, I love this one.
If anyone wants to call in, you have to do it in only a couple minutes here. 347-633-9657. Again, 347-633-9657. We'll be back for the third hour in just a little bit.
Who Let the Zog Out?
Here we go.
Who let the Zog Out? 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 The economy was nice, the market was bumping. And everybody having a ball. Until the Hebrews started the swindling. And the goys respond to the call. I heard a white man shout out, who let the Zog Out? Who let the Zog Out? Who let the Zog Out? Who let the Zog Out?
90 seconds.
The Jews will not let you drown. Get back Haitians, get back Libyans, get back you AIDS infested in news. Teacher told my kids about trannies. That cutting off your dick is just fine. Show them how to put condoms on bananas. And shove them up their godless behinds. I heard a white man shout out, who let the Zog Out? 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 Who let the Zog Out?
10 seconds.
All right, welcome back, folks.
It's always been one of my favorite Meraki tunes.
Oh, it's great. The Right Stuff.biz, everyone. The Right Stuff.biz. And we will talk briefly about ovenworthy.com before we get done with the show. First, I just wanted to get your guys' take on the narrative of your standard pool party here, where you have a bunch of black kids who were kicked out of a pool because of the racist members of the community who just didn't want to see black people enjoying the pool as well. And then this cop...
Which would be totally fine if that were even true, but...
Yeah. Yeah, right, it should be. But then, this racist cop just brutalizing these teens, to even pulled out a gun on black people. Could you believe it? It's just... It's like another show.
Like another show.
But not just because it's blacks and not Jews. You can't call it a show unless it's Jews.
What we've got here is we have a situation in America now that anytime you have blacks doing wrong, which unfortunately is often,
is every day, every second,
you have constantly,
yeah, and you have the police involved in stopping it. If somebody catches it on video, that makes anything that happened with law enforcement is now null and void, is wrong. Everyone gets fired. If you try to enforce the law in America against blacks and they happen to pick out the video of what you did, you're done. And anybody who doesn't like it is done. I mean, that's where we are now. People are getting fired for saying the things that we've said about it. People are getting fired for, I mean, the woman who was attacked by that one Dindu girl, she lost her job, or she was at least suspended from her job. It's just like it happened to Anthony Cumia. You get mugged by a black person, your reward is you lose your job now. This is America.
Because you're the victim. You're the victim, and then you become the villain.
You're the victim again.
Yeah. I mean, I found that, like, the people that were getting fired over the standard pool party were, like, a couple of people were, one was the principal, another was a teacher, and the principal guy just...
What is the one who was in that fight, Mike? Did you see that?
No, I know. I'm building to that. Okay. Hold on.
Sorry, bro.
So one of them was the principal, and all he said was, like, I just support the cop. That's it. He got fired. Another woman actually spoke out in favor of, like, segregation. And on some level, I get that. Like, I don't agree with it, but I get it, right? If you're a teacher, a public school teacher in the U.S., and you say, like, segregation was good, that's kind of going against everything the entire public school organization has been dedicated to for the last 50 years. So, you know,
it doesn't surprise me
that you get fired. I don't think she should have been, but it doesn't surprise me. But then the woman who was actually attacked at the pool that she pays essentially a tax to maintain, she pays a homeowners association fee tax into the commons to maintain the pool for the commons for that housing development. And she goes there, and there's all these teens, and one of them attacks her. And on video, she's shown fighting back, and she's fired for that. And
basically.
And it's like, what the crazy world? And we've seen the video. I mean, we've all here seen the video. There is nothing from that video that indicates she attacked the teen. When the video starts, there's two women. And the black girl is essentially on top of the white woman, pulling her hair. And another woman comes in and, like, hits the black girl until they separate. And then as soon as they separate, the two white people go their way. And then the black people go their way. From that, it's like you could potentially construct a narrative that a white person attacked the black person and this is the result. I don't buy that for a second, and neither does anybody who's observed black behavior for like 2 seconds. And I guarantee you, black people themselves that were there know it's bullshit and they don't believe it, but they're willing to push that narrative. So it's like there's not even anything in the video that would lead you to think that she started the fight. When the fight has started, when the video started, and then as soon as they push that the dindette away, it's over. So it's like
it's the same thing as
fucking investigate. Excuse me.
Same thing as about same thing that happened with Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, where these guys didn't do nothing, even though all the evidence shows that they did something. But because they're blacks, you're not supposed to defend yourself against them. Now in America, if you're a policeman doing your job with black criminals, Or if you're just a white person who is getting attacked by blacks, you better not call them niggers. Look at what happened to Paula Deen with that one. No. One of these cases, the black judge was scolding a little girl because she was fearing black men after getting held at gunpoint by them. Oh, that's racist, and that's a problem with the parents.
Yeah, I remember
that one. It's incredible.
The family's home was invaded by two blacks, and interestingly enough, in some deposition or something, the mother said something like, "Oh, our daughter is now afraid of black people," and because of that, the judge even gave the perps like a lenient sentence.
Well, how does that even follow? How is that logical? That because
it's not
this caused,
the judge
this
is
caused
black.
Trauma because this event caused trauma upon this poor little white girl and caused her to no longer trust blacks. That means that these people who committed the crime, who made her have this terrible association with blacks and their violent nature, for some reason now the blacks should get less sentence. Well, the judge himself obviously was black.
No, it's
the judge was black. Yeah.
No, it's total.
Supposedly he was investigated for that, but I don't know whatever happened.
It's infantizing niggers. That's all.
No,
that's probably my favorite. That's my favorite talking point to bring up too, because they just get fucking mad.
Yeah, I mean, the white people that advocate for this shit are infantilizing these nogs. I mean, they're essentially saying but the amazing thing is that it used to be like we're going to infantilize them, but we're going to discipline them. Yeah, like they're children, they need discipline.
Going to timeout.
It's like they're children and they need to run. It's like the new style of parenting is like, don't ever discipline your child. Let them have whatever they want at all times and then they'll be healthy. Anybody common sense knows that's fucking insane. But like,
and if your 5-year old identifies as a different sex, give him some hormone therapy. Start early. Oh, that's the new advice. God. It's amazing. Great parenting these days.
No, I've got it figured out. Okay, there's step one. Step one is dindus, do nothing wrong. Okay. Step two is basically dindus do nothing wrong. Step three is we claim that the media in America is claiming that all white people are lone wolves and scapegoats, etc., and then black people are all disproportionately represented in media as criminals and gang members, etc. That's what we do.
Well, the claim is always like when black people do crime and it's caught and the media actually reports on it, all black people are blamed. When a crazy white person does something, they're just a lone nut. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we actually know statistically how much black people commit crime. We actually know that based on the statistics of this, and even, I'll even say based on a gut intuition, when you enter an area as a white person that is all black, and I don't know if any of you guys have ever had the pleasure of actually being in a place where, like, literally every... There are a few times I found myself in that situation. It's actually not fun. Like, you're actually like, I don't know what's going to happen next. And that's not even close to the experience of a black person who's surrounded by all white people.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is when I watch CNN and I watch Fox News and I watch MSNBC and I read Huffington Post and Gawker and Salon and so on, I just see blacks overwhelmingly referred to as the perpetrators, whereas whites are just allowed to get away with everything. That's what I see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
white privilege. Criming while white. I saw that as a hashtag. Criming while white.
Well, it's definitely true.
There was one of the more absurd instances of that I saw the other day, where our pal Tim Wise, I'm sure everyone's familiar with
Tim Wise,
with good old Tim Wise. he's like, so some white guy, okay, some white guy opens fire on some cops. I don't even know what the context here was. But the context he gave was the guy shoots at cops and says, like, you'll have to kill me. All right, maybe that's all true. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, it's all true. Cops fire back, hit the guy in his shoulder. He's now...
I think we lost him.
Oh, Michael.
He's interpreting the... Oh, shit.
Hey, there you are.
Okay, he's back.
So okay, you're back, Mike. Time Warner.
Yeah, it's
time taking care of our...
I'm suffering under the monopoly capitalism of Time Warner Cable here.
This is why our show is never alive. Because
yeah. It's been particularly bad this last couple weeks. But anyway, how far did I even get?
I don't even know.
So, all right, he was basically saying because a guy shot at cops and didn't get killed, because when the cops shot him, they wounded him and he didn't die, he's got white privilege. Whereas, like, yes. Blacks... And I was like, what? Okay, keep going.
They aimed at his shoulder and hit his shoulder.
Their
shoulder's nowhere near the head or what is it? Chest
I've never fired a gun. Like, I have no fucking clue how this works.
I have no clue
that you can't actually at will hit somebody on the shoulder and wound them.
My head, neck. Is that how it goes, Mike?
They watch
the face and neck, chest, breast, and head.
They watch CSI. They think that's how it is. They think cops are all fucking Robin Hood.
Yeah, I'm just gonna pick. I'll just graze his shoulder. Get his shooting shit. He's white. Go for the shoulder. You know.
Yeah. Right. No, but that was the whole thing. I posted it on Twitter where it was like, oh no, I saw it on Twitter and then I posted it on our Zuckerberg account. And it was just this picture from Twitter, and it was like the first panel was like, what was it, a Muslim guy? And it's like, oh, Muslim guy goes on a shooting, you know, all whatever billion Muslim, 1.3 billion Muslims are blamed. And then the second panel was like, 6 million.
Oh, blacks, it's all gang, you know, it's all blamed on gang violence. And the third panel was like, oh, professional shooters, they're just great people. I don't even get that panel. It's like, professional shooters, they're just great Americans and patriots. I don't even understand that. And then the fourth panel was like a white guy, and it's like, oh, he's a lone wolf.
I think
he's psychopathic. He's mentally ill. And I was like, what are you talking? And then I responded on the Twitter account. It was like, oh, I don't understand the second panel. As far as I'm concerned, black people don't commit any crimes. They're all teens and vibrant youth. I don't get it.
Just letting off steam.
Yeah. They need space to destroy, that's all.
Well, guys, you know what I think is interesting.
Kyle, yeah. I'm going to go. I want to thank you for having us on, but I have to...
Seventh Son, I appreciate it. I really enjoyed talking to you tonight.
This was all fun. Right. This having callers thing is a thrill. We got to do that anyway. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for coming on.
I'm also going to be taking off.
Okay. Well, we lost Mike as well, so we might as well just round this out here. I think we've talked about a lot. I've got Meow Blitz still with me, but cool. Nice chatting with you tonight.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, who's still here? Okay, it looks like the call ended. Yes, Meow Blitz. All right, you know what? Let's just listen to a brief audio here, and then I'll come back for a conclusion. If you want to say anything about this, I just wanted to bring this up because I think it's very interesting. We're talking about the Dindus, and the main Dindus in the entire world, in my opinion, are the Jews. They're the biggest Dindus of all. We didn't do nothing wrong. You know, we got kicked out of all these countries because... You know, the Goyim are just anti-Semitic. They're just born haters. We didn't do nothing wrong. And finally, I think they're getting called out on it. We see the ones in the streets who are committing the petty crimes, but it's the Jews who are the ones in the suits or their ridiculous Orthodox getup who are committing some of the biggest crimes. The biggest crimes. Excuse me. Don't let me downplay the the criminality of the Jews. Biggest crimes on the planet, but they're getting called out for it. This is a clip of Stone Cold Steve Austin talking about basically a Jewish monopoly, or in other words, a Jewish conspiracy. This is very recent. I don't know if you've seen this, but kind of interesting. I thought the listeners might like to hear it as well.
I'm a Jew, and my people, we're not hunters. We're furriers. You know, I mean, right. You see, the whole crew's laughing now about that, especially the guy over there who's Jewish, because he knows. Because, you know, it's like, I can't kill the thing, but I can make you a nice lapel out of it.
But you're getting the diamonds as well. How y'all in? As you would say, diamonds, furs, a movie business. What's the deal here? It's a monopoly.
What? What?
What?
What?
People.
My people. Yeah. We own everything.
I know. The media. How is that?
Well, because we're the smart people. We're the Jews. You know, I mean, we screwed up in the Middle East. You know, I mean, we did. I mean, I can speak about this because, I mean, we're supposed to be the chosen people. And here we, you know, and here we pick the only piece of land in the Middle East that has no oil on it. Everything we have is sand and the Mediterranean Sea, which for generations people have been trying to push us out into. You know, every Jewish holiday is the same thing. They tried to kill us and we're still alive. So, I mean, you know.
Hey, I got to ask you.
So hunting's kind of out of the question for us. You know?
You've got an open invite anytime you want to come down.
In case anybody in the WWE Network has always wanted to know that, you know, Jewish history is told by Paul Heyman, you've now been educated about as far as I'm willing to take you.
All right, so that was Stone Cold Steve Austin, Austin 316, talking to Paul Heyman about the Jewish privilege of owning all the media and diamond trade. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I'm going to say this. You know, just a couple months ago, you know, I would say in the last 6 months, my personal views on this have changed significantly. Like, I know you had a Tonstoffel on your show and so on, and we kind of had a, I don't know, I invited him onto the show before, you know, and, you know, I had linked an article that I had done before, and, you know, I just wasn't that read up on the issue. But the more I dig into it, I'm just like, you know, this is incredible. It's just so crazy how the more, it's just disturbing. It's kind of like, you know, he had talked about the issue of kind of like gaslighting, how Jews will try to convince you that you're insane, you know, if you accept these narratives. And it's just like the more, it's kind of hard to explain, but I'll put it like this. If you really want to know what they're up to, you don't have to read some obscure anti-Semitic, you know, websites that look like they were made back in, you know, the 90s on some GeoCities, you know, shitty stuff. You don't have to read Mein Kampf. You don't have to read something, you know, pamphlets that were put out by, you know, Henry Ford or whatever. All you have to do is just go to their websites. You know, just go to Jewish cultural websites and just read what they have to say. And it's all spelled out.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They don't think that the goyim will actually take the time to go and look through their material. So they're very
honest.
Just,
yeah, that's the most insane thing about it is I'd always, you know, throughout our whole lives we've been trained like, you know, if you think this, you're insane, you're conspiracy theorists, blah, blah, blah. And of course there are people out there who they're trained, and I'm sure they're, you know, GIDF or whatever, you know, who all they do is go on websites and say like, oh, you say something bad about the Jew, you know, you're a conspiracy theorist. You probably think that, you know, reptile people were behind 9/11 and the Illuminati and all this, you know, you don't realize how in depth it is. And what's just completely nuts about it is all you have to do is just go to their websites and just read what they have to say. Like, what's the website? Haaretz.com, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There was an article just, I think it was like 2 months ago, where they openly state in the article, they're, and actually, I got to give this website a lot of props. I'm surprised that the people who write it haven't been, like, killed or something. But, you know, in the article, they basically say, look, like 3/4 of the people who have donated to the 2016 election, they're all Jewish billionaires.
What's up with that?
Yeah, you know, and it's just like, what? You know, it's kind of like, okay, so you're openly saying, and they even give profiles like, okay, here's this guy and that guy and that guy, you know, Soros, Adelson, etc. And they give whole profiles of them, you know what donations.
They can't help but brag. They love to brag about their success, how influential they are.
Well, that's the thing. That's like what when you did that interview with Tan, it was kind of like, what's the difference between anti-Semitism and philo-Semitism? Because on the one hand, they want to say, we don't have any influence. You know, we're not in charge of anything. And if you think that, you're paranoid and insane. But at the same time, it's kind of like they have it all in a bag and they just can't help but spill it out. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's really in your face if you just choose to look for it. And yeah, right. Yeah, they make jokes about it, and they obviously own the media. It's apparent. Stone Cold Steve Austin knows it. We all know it. Okay. Mm-hmm. He actually reached a lot of people. That will get a lot of people thinking, hey, what is up with this chosen tribe here? What else have they been, you know, what have they been doing with this dominance? What have they been lying about? Have they been fleecing the Goyim? Yeah, I think so. Well, Meow Blitz, I want to thank you very much for organizing this show tonight. Mm-hmm. You are the person I got in touch with via the Twitter account, and I'm glad this could happen. And hopefully you guys do so. Keep going. I encourage you to keep going, growing, expanding. And it was great talking to you guys tonight. And I want to thank everybody else who was on the call. Mike, I didn't get to say bye to him. But hopefully we'll be able to collaborate again at some point in the future.
All right. I had a lot of fun, Kyle. And, you know, shout out to all your fans. You know, if you know anybody's not familiar with our site, you know, just check it out. And
Ovenworthy.com. We didn't talk about it, but Ovenworthy.com.
Yeah.
A lot of interesting headlines up there. It's almost self-explanatory. So just go check it out. And therightstuff.biz.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. I want to thank everybody out there for listening, thank our guests tonight, and encourage you guys to check out all the great shows here on the network, and also go to renegadetribune.com, hellstormdocumentary.com, and all of our good friends out there in the alternative media. We're going to have a song here tonight. This is not by Meraki. This is by John Neames, and the title of this song is 6 Million. This is a brilliant song, so enjoy.
Now is the time for critical thinking minds to take another look inside your history books and turn to the pages that covers World War II and focus your attention on the 6 million Jews. Yes, 6 million Jews, it's a mantra you see. Not my point of view, but a fact, so don't get mad at me. There were no gas chambers in any of the labor camps. The victors wrote the story, it needs to be revamped. You see, the Holocaust is not what it appears to be. Yes, the Holocaust needs to be looked at more carefully. Yes, the Holocaust, clearly a logistic impossibility.
Yes, the Holocaust, a cash cow that keeps making money. 6 million lies is what we are told at birth. 6 million lies, it keeps growing and only gets worse. They used it as a propaganda tool for Zionist Israel, while forcing Palestine to become a living hell. You see, the Holocaust is not what it appears to be. Yes, the Holocaust needs to be looked at more carefully. Yes, the Holocaust, clearly a logistic impossibility. Yes, the Holocaust, a cash cow that keeps making money. It appears to be.